Good morning. It is time to get up and play ball. The schedule is coming together. What will this unprecedented baseball season look like next month? We've got the insight. Then, once and for all, what does Tampa Tom have to accomplish for this season to be a success? To me, that's easy. We've got that on the way. And then, one member of LeBron's team is not coming back. Wait until you hear who's going to join the Lakers for one more run at a title. All that and more as we get up with you, starting right now. From Bristol, Connecticut, Mike Greenberg here, and delighted you've chosen to get up with us. We welcome all of you who've been watching. Korean Baseball Organization Baseball will be with you for the next 2 hours, and then First Take will come your way in its entirety. It is a very busy day in sports here, so let's start with Get Up and Go. Beginning with hockey, the NHL has narrowed its list for possible hub cities down to 6, including Las Vegas, Toronto, and Edmonton. The league is planning on playing in 2 hub cities with 1 for each conference. So again, they've narrowed that list down and we'll keep you posted. Elsewhere, West Virginia put defensive coordinator Vic Koning on administrative leave yesterday as the school investigates allegations of mistreatment made by a player on the team who said that Koning made inappropriate comments about religion, politics, and the protests over racism and police brutality and said, quote, many of us are uncomfortable being around him. Elsewhere, Nikola Jokic has tested positive for the coronavirus in Serbia. Per NBA protocol, he'll need 2 negative tests within 24 hours in Serbia before he can receive clearance to travel to Denver. He had recently spent time with Novak Djokovic, who also tested positive. And to our top story, we will have baseball in 2020. MLB and the players have agreed to terms on health and safety protocols that came together last night, while the union also agreed to report to camps on July 1st, clearing the way for a 60-game regular season. So here is where it stands. Players will report July 1st. Opening day is scheduled for either the 23rd or 24th. Teams will play their divisional opponents 10 times each. The National League will use a designated hitter. And in extra innings, teams will begin with a runner on second base. There will also be COVID testing every other day for the players. And here he is, Robert Stanberry, only the third, my buddy Buster. So how did this come together, and how has sentiment around the sport shifted over the last roughly 24 hours?
Yeah, Greeny, it was fascinating. Early yesterday, and talking with people around the game, they were so angry and appalled, disgusted, frustrated, because Major League Baseball and the Players Association couldn't reach a deal. But then by the end of the day, when we found out that, yes, there is going to be an attempt to play baseball this year, you could start to hear the competitive juices flowing from people, with the staffers, with players now having a date in front of them. Look, I think there's an understanding that there's the inherent risk of the coronavirus. The whole thing could be derailed by that. But I think the players, staffers, very excited to get going, very excited to get cranked up and thinking about the 60-game possibility.
And hopefully fans will feel, and they hope, obviously, that fans will feel the same way as we look forward to a season that will be a sprint rather than the traditional marathon. And I just ran through some of the other short-term changes. Of those, which do you think will have the biggest impact, Buster?
Definitely the extra inning rule. We're going to have a runner at second base in the 10th inning. In recent years, there's been a trend in front offices and the way they think. They can't stand the long extra inning games. So think of what we're going to see in this 60-game season as a trial for baseball moving forward in an effort to truncate the number of innings they play. The universal DH in the National League. You think of a guy like Justin Turner of the Dodgers, Yoenis Cespedes of the Mets. It's going to give them an opportunity to play every day, maybe play through some nagging injuries. And the schedule is very interesting because there's so many games that are going to be against division rivals and, of course, the corresponding division in the other league. Think about Gleyber Torres of the Yankees. 1/6 of his games this season are going to be against the Baltimore Orioles. Greeny had a slugging percentage over 1,000 against the Orioles last year. Could be an advantage for teams like the Cleveland Indians, Chicago White Sox, who play in a weaker American League Central.
All right, going to be interesting to watch all of that. So, I can't believe I actually get to ask this question. Who do you consider to be the World Series favorites given the shortened format?
The deeper rosters, no question, could have an advantage. The teams with deep bullpens. And we have the usual suspects. The Yankees, maybe the best team on paper that we've seen since the 98 Yankees. The Los Angeles Dodgers with that incredibly deep roster that they have. But the team I'm going to be watching, my World Series favorite, the Tampa Bay Rays, who have an incredible bullpen. We saw that at the end of last year. That's going to be an advantage for them. And just being around them in spring training, boy, that group has come together They have a really deep group of position players. That's a team that's going to be very dangerous. They talked with Tyler Glasnow, one of their pitchers, last week, and he said they've had conversations that in a 60-game season, they could be a team to beat.
Who would have thought we'd actually have baseball conversation in our baseball conversation? Buster, thank you very much for the insight there. And again, they're getting ready to play ball. Meanwhile, other huge news yesterday. The FBI announcing that Bubba Wallace was not the victim of a hate crime at Talladega, and that the rope fashioned like a noose, which had been spotted in his garage stall on Sunday, had actually been on the garage door since as early as last October. NASCAR President Steve Phelps addressed the FBI's findings.
For us at NASCAR, this is the best result we could hope for. It is fantastic to hear from the FBI definitively that there was not a hate crime. I do want to make sure everyone understands that if given the evidence that was delivered to us, we would do the same thing. We would have done the same investigation. It was important for us to do. There is no place in our sport for this type of racism or hatred. It's not part of who we are as a sport.
All right. So again, as this news was announced yesterday, there was enormous reaction. Wallace himself joined Don Lemon on CNN to respond to claims that all of this was a hoax.
People that want to call it a garage pool and put out old videos and photos of knots being in their as their evidence. Go ahead. But from the evidence that we have, that I have, it's a straight up noose. Whether tied in 2019 or whatever, it was a noose. So it wasn't directed at me, but somebody tied a noose. That's what I am saying. And this will not break me. None of the allegations of being a hoax will break me or tear me down. Will it piss me off? Absolutely. But that only fuels the competitive drive in me to shut everybody up, to get back out on the racetrack next weekend in Pocono and showcase what I can do behind the wheel under tremendous amounts of BS, whatever it is you want to say. It won't break me. You won't tear me down. Again, I will still stand proud of where I'm at.
What a 48 hours it has been. Ryan McGee covers the sport for us so well here. And Ryan, thanks for getting up with us early. What can you tell us about reaction around the sport to the news yesterday?
Well, the reaction was relief. But because you heard Steve Phelps, NASCAR president, say it, this was not a hate crime. And this was not something that was done on this weekend during this, you know, charged time and during this time of social change everywhere, but particularly in the NASCAR garage. And so I think that has gotten lost a little bit because, as you know, as this story has become larger, and Bubba referenced it there with the social media reaction, the crazies are kind of running in on this thing now and the conspiracy theorists. And so the reality is that NASCAR was very adamant on Sunday night about how angry they were. And that was understandable. That was a long day. This was a day when Confederate flags were all around the racetrack, not actually inside the racetrack. They knew that fight was coming. That didn't make it any less frustrating. At the end of that day, when you've had a rainout, they come to you and say, oh, by the way, we found a noose in Bubba Wallace's garage. So the reaction was understandable. As a result, there's a lot of emotion involved in this thing, and that includes, as I said, the crazies. But the news is that there's relief because there was not a hate crime on site.
And so, Ryan, for all of those who are watching who may not follow the sport closely day in, day out, week in, week out, how would you contextualize, if you will, what these last few days have been for NASCAR?
Well, I mean, Greeny, I've been covering the sport for 25 years, and the only time I've seen anything that was in the same universe as what we saw on Monday afternoon at Talladega, when the drivers, and they organized this, surrounded Bubba Wallace's car, pushed it to the front of the grid, and every crew member in that garage followed it out to the front of the grid. The only time I've ever even seen anything close to that was when Dale Earnhardt Sr. finally won the Daytona 500 in 1998, and all the crew members stood in line to congratulate him. So you go from that, from the low of the night before with the news of the noose, and then you go back 2 weeks earlier with the announcement of the Confederate flag ban. And so, again, I've been doing this for a quarter of a century, and I've never seen anything like it. And I'm also I don't want this to be lost. You heard Steve Phelps, and you heard in his voice right there, yes, they may have been a little too aggressive with their announcement on Sunday night, but the intent was there. And the fact that the leadership of NASCAR actually did something in the past, I'm telling you for a fact, it would have been swept under the rug because they could have done that on Sunday. Only a handful of people knew about it.
extraordinary. And Ryan, your coverage of this has been terrific. Thank you very much for the perspective. We'll run here, but we'll have more as we go. And I'll remind everyone that Bubba Wallace will be a guest with us tomorrow morning, live here, 10 a.m. Eastern time tomorrow on Get Up. We will talk to Bubba Wallace about what has been an extraordinary several days for him. And I mean that in the larger sense of the word, just unimaginable, all the things that have happened in his life. We'll talk with him tomorrow morning. Meanwhile, despite warnings from their union, Tom Brady and his new teammates are working out together. You'll hear why this is so important and what it means. Plus, Ben Roethlisberger is back. But how much can we really expect from him at 38? Ryan Clark and Dan Orlovsky have answers to those questions and more as we get up with you on ESPN.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday. Social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Get Up is brought to you by The Last of Us Part 2, available now, rated M for mature. To some football, the Steelers hoping to have Ben Roethlisberger back at full strength this season after the star quarterback was lost for the year with an elbow injury after week 2 last season. Coach Mike Tomlin said yesterday Big Ben's recovery is right on track.
He's comfortable and pleased with where he is. Some of the people that have had an opportunity to work out with him have been impressed and are, you know, are pleased with where he is. The medical experts are comfortable with where he is in the rehabilitation process and the overall trajectory of his readiness for 2020. And so all those things being said, I'm comfortable with where he is.
Let's talk about it. My favorite former Steeler is with us this morning. Ryan Clark is here today. Dan Orlovsky is ready to go, and Jeff Darlington is here as well. But, RC, I'll start with you. You rolled with Big Ben to a Super Bowl. What are your expectations for him at 38 coming off the injury?
My expectations are that Ben can play extremely well. You look at Washington, Johnson, Smith-Schuster on the outside. And also this defense that Coach Tomlin told me himself. He said, I got the same feeling walking into stadiums that I had when you played, RC. And if you remember those defenses, they carried the Pittsburgh Steelers during that time. And so Big Ben has weapons on the outside. He has a good offensive line. And last he was healthy, we watched him throw for the most yards he ever had in his career. But they aren't going to be depending on Big Ben as they've been for the last decade. So he has to go out there and play well, play smart, but he doesn't have to carry the team. I'm expecting big things from him and the Pittsburgh Steelers in this season.
Yeah, Dan, and people forget, I think, that Roethlisberger led the league in yardage 2 years ago, then only plays the very beginning of last season. What do you see happening?
Yeah, Big Ben's going to play really well. RC mentioned last year, and even Big Ben himself has mentioned, this is the best his arm has felt in years. And I know this is a conversation about Big Ben, but it's not about him for me. This is about Juju Smith-Schuster, because the reality is this. For Big Ben to perform the way he wants, he's always had a big-time receiver. And Juju really needs to step up to being that true number one, because you go to his rookie year when he had Antonio Brown, he has 58 catches for like 900 yards. Really good rookie year. And then his second year, again, still with Antonio Brown there, he has 111 catches for 1,400 yards. And then go back to last season, and I know Big Ben's not there, but AB's not there as well, and he drops down to 40 yards. So for Big Ben to be in one of the top quarterback conversations for this coming season, this is so much more about Juju. Juju needs to become that bona fide number one receiver that Ben has always had. The Hines Wards, the ABs, Plaxico, someone like that that the Pittsburgh Steelers are notorious for. So for me, this is way more about Juju Smith-Schuster becoming that bona fide number one without Antonio Brown opposite him than really is Big Ben going to be able to perform this season.
I like that take. In both of Ben's Super Bowl wins, a wide receiver was actually the MVP of the game. Jeff, jump in here. What are your thoughts on him coming off the injury?
Well, it's interesting because I actually was skeptical initially about the idea that, well, you know, even if it's not this injury, what injury will it be from here? He's getting older. He seems like his body is breaking down. But honestly, I kind of dispelled my own myth by simply doing the research and recognizing the fact that Ben played 16 games in 2018. He played 15 games other than a meaningless game at the end of the season in 2017. The last six seasons in general, he really has missed very minimal time due to injury. He's been largely durable. So while we kind of, I think, are resigned to believe that maybe Ben will continue to deal with injuries because he just gets banged around so much, we really should be having the conversation where this guy is also another fountain of youth, just like Tom Brady and Drew Brees. He really continues to do the things that have made him effective for decades.
If those guys are the example, then yes, he still has plenty of time. So, RC, we look at a division last year where the Ravens had just a magical year. Everything came together perfectly, and they were, during the regular season, the best team in football. But the Steelers stayed in playoff contention right to the end with probably the worst quarterback situation of any team in the league. What is your expectation for Pittsburgh in that division with Ben back?
The Pittsburgh Steelers will be the second team from the AFC North in the playoffs. And this is not going to be, oh, they're going to sneak in right at the bottom. I believe this team will compete to win 11 or 12 games this season. The Baltimore Ravens, they could win 16. They could win 15. And so I expect them to represent the AFC North as the champion. But the Steelers are going to be a very tough out in the playoffs because they're going to be built the right way. Great defensively, great up front, with a veteran quarterback that is healthy in 2020.
There could be seven teams in the playoffs this year. If there had been last year, the Steelers would actually have made it. They would have been seventh. Dan, you going to pick them to win the division?
Yeah. I'm not picking them to win the division just yet. That is still Baltimore. But you can book it, like RC said, that they will be in the playoffs. But if it gets to January 1 next year and the Steelers do win the division, I will not be shocked. And let me tell everyone why. The Baltimore Ravens are losing, arguably, at worst, their second best player, and that's Marshall Yonder, their offensive guard. Marshall Yonder, in his 2 years with Lamar Jackson, gave up two sacks to Lamar. Running behind him, they average almost 7 yards per carry. So they're losing, at worst, their second best player, and the Steelers are gaining their best player and their Hall of Fame quarterback, Ben Roethlisberger. So I will not be shocked in the least bit if Pittsburgh wins the division. They're both going to be in the playoffs, but right now the Ravens are still the favorite because they've got that quarterback.
And you know what I've been saying, though, for the last month? Don't overlook the Cleveland Browns. These are not last year's Cleveland Browns or any of the last 30 years' Cleveland Browns. We'll find out. All right, we'll take a short break. We'll come back. Much more football to come. And then we're getting to basketball as well. LeBron and JR, they have a lot of history together. Not all of it great. Why a reunion seems on the horizon. On the way. Get up, ESPN.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with Geico. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Tonight, The Undefeated presents another special titled Time for Change, We Won't Be Defeated, that will examine black athletes' experiences with injustice and the unifying role that sports continues to play in bridging the divide between law enforcement and people of color in America. L. Duncan, Michael Eaves, Jay Harris, Maria Taylor will be your hosts. That's 8 Eastern tonight on ESPN and the ESPN app. And as we reach the top of the hour, 9 o'clock in the morning in the Eastern time zone, I am Mike Greenberg in Bristol and delighted you've chosen to get up with us. Special time today. We're with you as we follow Korean baseball, and First Take will follow us in its entirety, a full 2 hours there. And we have big news from the NBA. If you're a basketball fan, you will be fascinated to hear this. It starts with Lakers guard Avery Bradley opting out of playing in the NBA's Orlando bubble. He has been a co-leader of a players' coalition with Kyrie Irving that has sought to have several social justice issues addressed by the league in their restart plan. And he told ESPN, "As committed to my Lakers teammates and the organization as I am, I ultimately play basketball for my family. And so at a time like this, I can't imagine making any decision that might put my family's health and well-being at even the slightest risk. As promised, also, I will use this time away to focus on the formation of projects to help strengthen my community. So Avery Bradley is not going to be playing in the restart. Here's our man Woj, Adrian Wojnarowski. Woj, what can you tell us about Bradley's decision?
Greeny, it was driven by family. He's got a six-year-old son among their three children that has a history of respiratory illness, and they did not believe he would be cleared along with his family to go into the bubble after the first round of the playoffs and join Avery. And so the idea, number one, of being away from his family for 3 months under those circumstances and worried about going back in to his house and possibly bringing whether it's the virus or bringing anything in with him that would negatively affect him. It was a tough decision. This is Avery Bradley's been a great pro in the NBA. He's a starter on the best team, certainly in the Western Conference this season. And losing him is a significant blow for this Laker team.
No question. And the reasons why he's doing it are easy to understand and all of that. But then we turn the page to the part of this that gets to be a little bit of fun as we ask you, who might the Lakers turn to as a replacement?
J.R. Smith. His agent, Rich Paul, was in contact with Rob Pelinka, the Lakers general manager. They've already been discussing the possibility of him joining the Lakers and taking Avery Bradley's spot on the roster. Now, J.R. Smith's been out of the league essentially 2 years now, and there is some guard depth on this Laker team. If you remember, Deion Waiters signed with the Lakers prior to the shutdown, but the Lakers did work out J.R. Smith earlier around that same time when they went with Deion Waiters, Alex Caruso, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. So there's some other players who certainly will pick up, burden some of those minutes that they lose with Avery Bradley. But J.R. Smith, I'm told, is a leading candidate to join this Laker team. There's no agreement in place now, but they talked last night. I'm told they'll speak again today.
All right. So all of us who are in the interesting business are certainly hoping that happens because J.R. Smith and LeBron
it leads the league in interesting.
Are always interesting. Yeah. No question. What more do we have on opt-out decision day? That's today. The players who are choosing, as Avery Bradley did yesterday and a few others have, not to go back and play in the restart. Today is the day that they need to let people know. What more do we expect today?
Well, first along those lines, Greeny, this is really teams are treating today as almost a soft a date for that opt-out, that if you want to be excused and get paid and go through a process, essentially through a medical panel, to do that, you've got to let the league, you've got to let your team know by today. But teams don't have to give their rosters into the NBA until July 1, and that's really the day that teams are targeting. So players like Victor Oladipo in Indiana, who's ramping up his activity this week with the team, he'll have a better idea maybe by July 1. But Indiana's plans are, even if he's not sure, they're not sure about that knee and its health, they can take him to Orlando and opt out really at any point of this. But I still think there's some players considering it. What you're going to see more, I think, today, Greeny, as teams all over the league did coronavirus testing with their players yesterday and expect to get those results back today, you may see, another run of positive tests. We reported yesterday, Nikola Jokic, who's certainly the highest profile player in the league, who we know has tested positive. He's still in Serbia, and he'll travel to join the Nuggets in Denver once he's cleared within the next week, I'm told.
All right. A lot to keep an eye on today. And, Woj, obviously, you'll be doing that for us, and we'll check in with you again tomorrow. Thank you very much. Back to the NFL we go now, and let's talk about Tom Brady and his new team. Several of his Buccaneer teammates, including Rob Gronkowski, continue to work out together at a local Tampa high school. This video was from yesterday, and this despite the NFLPA advising against players working out together because of the coronavirus pandemic. So for more on this, we bring in our Buccaneers reporter. There's Jenna Lane. Jenna, why is it so important to the Bucs players that they continue these practices?
Greeny, because come fall, nobody's going to care if Tom Brady did not get reps during OTAs and he did not get mini camps. This is a team that last year wasn't even part of the playoff conversation. Now people are talking about Super Bowl. They have so many expectations and they understand the weight of that. That's why they're all getting together. And if you listen to Tom Brady when he first got to the Buccaneers earlier this offseason, he continued to say, I've got to get up to speed. I've got to get up to speed. This is his first time playing in a new offense in Bruce Arians' offense. He's got to get assimilated with that. He's got to get chemistry with new teammates. And he's also got to push some of these young defensive backs, because if you watch the Bucs last year, that was their Achilles heel, their secondary. They were a big reason why this team struggled in winning close games like against the Seattle Seahawks. And so because of that, they started adding those guys to some of these practices because they don't want to be the reason that arguably the greatest quarterback of all time does not have success here. And they know that they have a really short window to work with.
Absolutely. Brady will be 43 by the time we get to the season. So the rules are the rules, if you will. They're being advised not to work out together. It's not really a hard, fast rule. These players are clearly ignoring that. So now what happens?
I've spoken to the NFL and I've spoken to the NFLPA. It sounds like no fines are going to be issued or anything like that. They encourage players to follow guidelines imposed by their state and local governments and also from medical professionals, including the NFLPA, whose own medical expert weighed in on that, as you said, advising players not to have these group workouts. And you see the impact of foregoing that advice with what happened with the Colorado Rockies, with three players testing positive. Now what for them? And so really it's about optics. This is a community in the Tampa Bay area that has struggled with following guidelines, so much so that they had to issue a mandatory mask ordinance where fines are now being posed on residents if they don't comply with that. So you would really hope that someone like Tom Brady, who's in such a heavy position of influence, not just locally but globally, you would hope that him and his teammates would understand that and understand the optics of this, that it's not necessarily a good look for them to be doing this.
Let's see what winds up happening there. And I know you'll keep an eye on it for us, Jenna. Thank you very much. Meanwhile, I want to talk more about Tom Brady this morning, because the legacy of Brady and his career will obviously remain in Foxborough, where he spent 20 seasons under any circumstances. But how will his second act in Tampa be remembered? This is the way I see it. Tom Brady seemed certain to wind up like Derek Jeter, 20 seasons, one team.
I've had the greatest job in the world, shortstop for the New York Yankees.
Or Kobe Bryant.
To spend 20 years here, I mean, you can't write something better than this.
Or Dirk Nowitzki or Cal Ripken. Instead, the more apt comparisons now figure to be Joe Montana, his childhood idol, Brett Favre, Peyton Manning, and Michael Jordan. Awfully fancy company to keep, and here's why. Montana played his final two seasons with the Chiefs and played well. Went 17-8, made the AFC Championship game. But he didn't win it, and his old team won the Super Bowl with his replacement Steve Young in what proved to be Montana's final season. Thus, not even in Kansas City is he remembered as a Chief. Favre played three seasons after leaving the Packers and also played well. Much better in one year with the Jets than is usually remembered, and then an MVP-caliber season in Minnesota in 2009. Trouble is, that season ended with this terrible interception in the NFC title game.
Why do you even ponder passing? I mean, you can take a knee.
And his final season was an injury-plagued mess. He'll forever be a Packer. Jordan came back after 3 years of retirement to play for the Wizards and put up pretty good numbers considering. He played all 82 games his final season and became the only player ever to score 40 in a game at the age of 40. But his team didn't make the playoffs either year. Michael will forever be a Bull. That leaves Manning, Brady's arch rival and good friend, who had by far the most success in his second act. Four seasons in Denver, MVP of the league in 2013, throwing 55 touchdowns, and then capping it with a Super Bowl win in his final NFL game. That is the ticket. On his bust in Canton, there will be room for a little orange around the horseshoe. And thus, the marching orders for Brady are simple. If you think Tampa Tom has a nice ring to it, you're going to have to win a ring for anyone to remember. That's what I think, and I'm willing to defend it. Our best defense this morning is brought to you by Meguiar's. And let me bring my football guys back in here. I'm saying, Dan Orlovsky, that in order for this to be a success for Tom Brady and the Buccaneers, they have to win the Super Bowl. Anything short of that does not measure up. Do you agree or disagree?
Completely agree. The expectation is for Tom Brady and the Buccaneers to win the Super Bowl this year. And if they don't, they fall short of their goal. Do we really think that Tom Brady left the arguably the greatest organization when it comes to winning in the last, certainly the last two decades, to go get to a wild card game or to go to win the divisional game or even get to the NFC championship game? Like, Tom Brady's the most maniacal competitor ever. He was the guy who said at last year's Super Bowl, I will not be at next year's Super Bowl wearing a blazer. He has stated the expectations himself. And Greeny, when you look at the football team, we've talked about last 6 weeks of the season last year, this defense was one of the better ones in football. This is the most offensive talent Tom Brady has been around since Randy Moss. He's got arguably a top six receiver in Mike Evans. He's got arguably two top 12 receivers if you add in Chris Godwin. He got one of the greatest tight ends of all time to come out of retirement. They moved up in the draft to take a tackle. Like, what are we, this is, anyone who says that this team just wants to make the playoffs has not paid attention to Tom Brady the last 20 years. It is Super Bowl or bust for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and they're capable of doing it.
What a great pop from Hembo, by the way, while you were talking. Brady has won 27 playoff games and five Super Bowls, by the way, since the last time the Buccaneers organization won a postseason game. RC, can he do it? Can they do it? Is that too tall a task, or can this team and this quarterback win it?
But you know what, though? Can I talk about how mad I am at you and Dan?
Please.
This is, and it's Tom Brady's fault. It's Tom Brady's fault. Here's why. Because Tom Brady's been to 9 Super Bowls in the last 2 decades, y'all think, oh, it's just easy. Tom Brady always gets to the Super Bowl. Tom Brady has messed all of our heads up. We don't remember how hard it is to get to the Super Bowl or how many great Hall of Fame players don't have rings. This team wasn't even in the playoffs last year. So if he gets them into a deep Super Bowl or deep playoff run, this is a success. That is improvement. That is progress. And Tom Brady signed a 2-year deal. He isn't just here for one pop in and moving out. Now, does this team have the roster to make a Super Bowl run or even win it? Yes, but they need the chemistry. They need to come together and everything needs to gel on the field. And I expect that to take time. This team will be an extremely hard out in the playoffs, but to think that they have to win the Super Bowl or this isn't a success is just unfair. It's just not true. Tom Brady, I get it. He says he doesn't want to wear a blazer at the Super Bowl. So maybe he just doesn't have to come, but he doesn't have to win it for this season to be a success.
Go ahead, Dan.
What, Dan?
RC, this isn't about fair. We're talking about Tom Brady. We're talking about playing quarterback in the NFL. There's nothing to do about fair here. Whether it's fair or not is in the conversation. His job is, his expectation is for that team to win a Super Bowl. I know this. One of my favorite shows is Billions. And every time I put on Billions, my expectation is an amazing episode. Why? Because Paul Giamatti's in it. And he's one of the greatest actors of all time. Every single time I cut on that episode, I want a great episode. Every time Tom Brady takes the field, I don't care if it's with the Bucks. I don't want care if it's with the Westport High School, Staples High School football team. His expectation is to win the football game and go win a championship, RC. And you know that.
Let me get
don't
Darlington.
Play.
Let me get Darlington in here. Hold on. Let me get Jeff in just for a quick second here, Jeff. what are you hearing in this conversation, and what can you tell us about Brady's expectations?
First of all, let me just say something. Dan, your expectations for Tom Brady and the Bucs, more importantly, have changed so drastically in like 3 months. I think we were all sitting in New York, and I hate to bring this up again, but I mentioned the idea of the Bucks, and you scoffed. You said Brady would never go there. That'd be ridiculous. That would never happen.
Right.
And now all of a sudden he's supposed to, it's Super Bowl or bust? Like, come on. I mean, by the way, I do think it's Super Bowl or bust, but your expectations are unfair.
Dan, they're picking on you, and candidly, I'm here for it. RC, jump in.
What? But I'm saying, listen, Dan went to Billions, right? And Dan is talking about Chuck Rhodes. Dan is talking about a guy who has been much like him in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He doesn't know if he wants to prosecute X. He doesn't know if he wants to work with him to keep his wife out of jail. That's exactly where Dan is right now. He doesn't know what he wants. And when you look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I expect this team to be good. I don't even know if this team's going to win the NFC South. Even though Tom Brady's goals are to win a Super Bowl, and that's every year he steps on the field, we have to look at the entire organization, and there is still work to be done.
Dan, go ahead, finish up.
But RC, that does not change the expectation. Like, Tom Brady did not leave New England just because, oh, cool, Tampa's got some great beaches, and this is the most talent he's had since Randy Moss. He went there because he looked at it and said, right, all right, it's somewhere in the geographic location I want, but I can go win a Super Bowl there. And Tom Brady, for us to think that if I mention Tom Brady's name to any fan in football, one of the first things they're going to think of is Super Bowl. They're not going to think of, oh, wow, they were really good in 2020, but they lost a divisional round. Their expectation is to go win the Super Bowl. And Darlington, don't sell me out, bro, okay? I disagreed with you initially, but my expectations have changed.
He reserves the right to change his mind, and candidly, he's right.
You now make it seem like Tom Brady is joining the 1972 Dolphins all of a sudden. This is crazy.
They have a sneaky great defense, which is something that doesn't come up enough and actually going to be the strength of their team this year. We'll take a break. We'll talk about another quarterback as we continue. Lamar Jackson became a superstar, named MVP last year. So how can he improve? It's actually pretty simple. We'll show you how next. Get up on ESPN.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Back on Get Up, and let's talk about Lamar Jackson. Electric as a 22-year-old sophomore, if you will, in 2019, and became the third youngest MVP ever. Led all quarterbacks in both rushing yards and touchdown passes. First player ever to rush for 1,000 yards and throw 30 touchdowns, and he was efficient, too. He threw a touchdown on 9% of his throws, second highest rate in NFL history after one of Peyton Manning's seasons in 2004. He also proved a lot of doubters wrong with his accuracy, completing 68% of his throws outside the numbers to the tune of 14 touchdowns and just two picks. Here's his offensive coordinator, Greg Roman, on what Jackson's been working on this offseason.
Well, Lamar's still relatively a young player. I think all aspects of his game, he was able to really look into with a critical eye. And I think it's been very valuable for him. So I don't know that it was just one thing. I think it's been really everything. I think there's a lot of little things that he really became aware of as he was able to look at the body of work he's put out so far.
Dan and RC back with me. Dan, my quarterback here. He had one of the best years statistically in every conceivable way that any quarterback has ever had. So how does he get better?
Well, you heard Greg Roman talk about the little things and developmental part of his game. Listen, Lamar won the MVP last year, and he did a lot of remarkable things, but he's still a young player, so you want him to see him growing. But I'll pick out two specific. First of all, the hits. And for everybody who wants to talk to me about, well, Lamar avoids hits better than anybody ever. Yeah, that's true. But last year, including the playoffs, Lamar Jackson took 205 hits. Okay, since that number started getting registered in 2006, that's the most a quarterback's ever taken. So that's a very real thing. The more hits Lamar can avoid, the better for him in that organization. And then two, this would probably be the biggest on-field thing performance-wise. Can you find a way to win the game when you don't have your best stuff? When you're not playing the way you want to play or your team is struggling, can you find a way to win that football game? Because the reality is, I love watching Lamar in the regular season, but I don't care about it anymore. What do you do in the playoffs? When if you don't play your best, there is no game next week. So struggling 2 years ago against Kansas City, doesn't turn it on until late. Last year doesn't have his best stuff against Tennessee. Not the reason they lost, but last year doesn't have his best stuff, and they fall down 14-0, and they can't game that they want to play. Can you be like Steph Curry sometimes where he's 2-for-8 from three-point range and gets hot, or like Tiger Woods does? Find a way to win games when you don't have your best stuff.
RC, what do you think?
For me, it's about him expanding his game outside of the numbers. When you watch the Baltimore Ravens play offense, you can cut the field off at the numbers and stack everything inside. He was fourth in passing yards in between the numbers. Outside, he was 27th. That's something that Himbo sent me over this morning. And when you look at that, think about the Tennessee Titans when they had Logan Ryan, Kenny Vaccaro, and Kevin Byard, three very good players in the interior secondary. It was very difficult for them to make plays in the passing game. So he's going to have to expand. Greg Roman's going to have to open up the playbook, because when it comes down to those one-week games, like Dan Orlowski is speaking about, where you have to be your best, we've watched him be out-schemed 2 years in a row.
Yeah. The reality is, if you consider where he was, where he began, to where he's gotten this quickly, it is really one of the great stories to this point in NFL history. If he takes another step forward, there's no telling how good he and that team might wind up becoming. Meanwhile, I'll remind you that it is fight night tomorrow night here on ESPN. Jason Maloney taking on Leonardo Baez, a pair of bantamweights in the main event. Maloney's won his last three by knockout. Baez comes in on a six-fight win streak. Our coverage of the prelims begins at 8 Eastern on ESPN, the ESPN app, and on ESPN Deportes. As we continue, a whole lot is expected of Dak Prescott and Drew Brees this season, but if they go down, are the Cowboys and Saints doomed? Orlovsky says no, and he'll explain why as we continue. Get up on ESPN.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the thrill of the revving engine and pure adrenaline of flying down the highway, to the confidence of knowing that GEICO always has your back with 24/7 access to claims service. But Ari Snyder has one reason in particular.
I have extremely large upper arms. They won't even fit into most shirts. Thankfully, biking really embraces vest culture, so I feel accepted.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.